listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. And with me today is our favorite guest. He's Greg Weldon, the CEO of Weldon Financial. Last time we spoke with Greg, I believe it was in February of this year, and Greg was very bullish on the metals, particularly bullish on the mining stocks. And he was not concerned that the stock market holding up okay or performing well would impact the move in precious metals. He was correct all around, and that's why we have Greg back today to give us an update. And first things first, Greg, I do want to mention you have a new gold product. You guys can go to www.gold-guru.com. That's gold-guru.com. We'll talk about that at the end of the interview. But Greg, first things first, let's talk about the move in gold and the Fed decision coming up, and technically, it looks like gold is getting a little overbought here, but it did clear some resistance around 1420. What do you see technically, and how might the upcoming Fed decision impact the market over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I mean, the Fed decision will clearly impact the markets. I think the gold market less so than other markets, and we can kind of maybe get to that in a second, because it is important to first look at where we are and then how does where we are and where we expect to be compared to what the Fed expectations are, or the expectations for the Fed meetings coming up. Where we are now is, of course, is the long-term breakout. So we have spent months and months and months, you know, 1377 down to 1365, and then it was 1355, and then it was 1344. And, you know, a series of declining highs over months, you know, literally, you know, a year and a half. I mean, how long has this been? Since it's at least 12 months. And then at the same time, holding Fibonacci levels on the downside. I mean, like really robust, you know, holding of technical levels, particularly around the 1260 level with the most recent rally prior to this bigger breakout, when, in fact, the dollar was moving higher and was breaking out itself and was threatening to move back to like the 2016-17 highs around, you know, 104, which would have lopped down another 6-7% of appreciation in the dollar, which over the last year and 5 years has appreciated pretty strongly. So if you do the correlations and the overlays and so on and so forth, with the dollar doing what it was doing, gold could have very easily and frankly should have been, based on the overlay, more like 1,100, 1,150 instead of 1,260 to 1,300. So I remember taking a lot of questions at the time, like, isn't this poor performance? Gold's not breaking out. Gold's not breaking out. It's like, it's not breaking down is the way to look at it here. And frankly, this has been a process of a bigger picture nature where gold is now in its sweet spot, where it is appreciating against all paper currencies. And this gets back to the bigger picture. This gets back to the Fed. This gets even more so, Jordan, to the ECB coming up too, and what's going to be next for them. And the reason we, in fact, started, you know, gold-guru.com is because I feel like this is 2005, 2006 all over again, to the degree that, you know, monetary officialdom is going to be facing big decisions down the road. And, of course, when peering into a deflationary abyss, you're going to choose to reflate at no matter what the cost, you know, and even if that means, you know, basically the nuclear option or even monetary Armageddon. And in 2005, that's why I wrote the book Gold Trading Bootcamp, because I kind of saw what was coming. You saw the debt. You saw it linked to housing. You see people borrowing 100% of their homes and more at prices that, like, it's never going to go down. It's the same thing with stocks now. Everyone owns stocks. The Fed will always have your back. Stocks can never go down now. It's almost the same thing. The credit, U.S. consumer credit, is through the roof. It is now above $4 trillion for the last 4 months in a row, making record highs. The expansion is back to a pretty rapid pace because of the stock market. And, you know, so you've borrowed again against a paper asset that the Fed has all but, you know, convinced people that will not go down for any sustainable period of time. You'll never lose money in the stock market, just like in the mid-2000s. You'll never lose money in your home price. And it's the same kind of shell game, to where if the stock market does go down, and in a scenario where maybe the Fed makes a misstep, waits too long, let's keep in mind, fixed income market, the Fed funds futures, has priced in 3, if not 4, rate cuts by the end of next year. The Fed's dot plot has them 1 and done. Now, admittedly, the dot plot is a puppeteering tool. And the dot plot has been more hawkish than the reality since 2014 when taper led to tap out. And you've been right to follow the market versus the Fed's dot plot, because the Fed really isn't concerned about being right. They're concerned about managing the market's expectations. So in that vein, it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out coming forward. But at the end of the day, we know central banks are going to have to pump more money, especially in Europe. They're going to have to come up with new creative ways to do this. There's so many similarities. Yeah, a lot of differences, but so many similarities to what we saw in 2006 and then into 2007. I mean, right now you're kind of almost, you know, in the 2007 zone already. And in that case, you know, again, when you see what gold is doing, it is basically telling you that the global investor, you know, as a whole, is becoming less – is becoming more anxious about all the paper and central banks and printing more paper, because, you know, currency debt doesn't matter. It's all IOUs. And it gets back to like J.P. Morgan, you know. You know, everything but gold is credit. And I'm not a gold bug like that, but I see the scenario developing just like I did in 2006, 2007, wrote the book. So this time we did Gold Investor Bootcamp, which we, you know, had some of your people on, and it was phenomenally successful. And when we got deluged with questions, we decided to do goldguru.com, not necessarily like, oh, my God, that's a great money-making idea. Of course, everyone wants to secure their financial future, but that's what we really want to help people do. It became more about getting requests for, you know, for advice, and so that's why we started the website. It's very inexpensive. And I think you are into a bigger picture breakout that is not necessarily going to be derailed here, you know, by anything linked to paper. And even if the Fed were to make a misstep, okay, and not meet the market's expectations or the timing of that, and maybe if the dollar does spike, that would be a risk to gold. And if the dollar spikes and it's a dollar credit problem, because there's so much dollar debt out there now, and that's a big deal, how many places can you not use the local currency now as a means of transactions? They demand dollars or digital or gold. All right, so that's only going to increase, and I think this is big picture, secular stuff where you have a massive, big, you know, it's the next bull market here in the precious metals.
So technically, let's discuss where we are. Are you worried at all that gold could have an aggressive correction? What do you see as the next upside target, right, and important resistance for gold, just maybe on a weekly or monthly time frame?
Well, I think that this breakout should bring you 1550 to potentially as high as 1780-ish. That's a pretty wide range. But, I mean, the 2013, I think it was, or 2012, you had an interim low at around 550. And the rally off that low took you up to 789. So, 1789, excuse me. Those are the only really big technical levels above it. This is why, I mean, when we got bullish so long ago, this was a thing where you didn't want to wait till it violated 1377 and broke out. But even if you did, you still had such a good potential risk reward on the upside. What I will say is, you know, some of that has been eaten away in gold. All right, gold, I mean, you know, the gold-silver ratio was at the highest level in three decades. You know, so we started looking more at silver more recently. So we've lightened up our position in gold so that we could become more aggressive in silver. And we've become very aggressive in silver as of last week. And this week already, it's popping. I mean, the silver mining shares, more important, you know, in terms of this. Am I worried about gold? If the dollar spikes and it's a dollar credit issue and the Fed doesn't respond quickly enough, that is a risk to gold. No doubt about it. But I think gold will fare better than other potential assets in that case, like it kind of did in 2008. And I think more importantly, again, the reaction from the Fed will be such that if it is a dollar problem and that is what the risk to gold is, the response is even more bullish for gold, because it will mean the Fed has to be the central banker to the world because it's a dollar problem. All right. But where we are now in terms of the risk to gold, is that a risk? Yes, it is. Am I worried about it? I'm absolutely not worried about it for kind of one simple reason. A, silver is now moving. B, and more important, the silver mining shares, the gold mining shares, and even the juniors are breaking out, and are breaking out against not only nominally but against the price of gold. You know, and I know, and everyone out there listening knows how important, how bullish that is. And what I said when you had me on last in February, if you recall, is that the next wave of this, when you get to the point where the Fed will actually be cutting rates, you're going to see rotation of capital out of the high-tech stocks, out of some of the upside leaders, and into precious metals. The stage was set for this, and now it's happening, and it's a very bullish tell. The last thing I would add, hello, platinum. Just wake up call to platinum here all of a sudden too. And you look at some of the, you know, some of the mining shares too. And let's not forget, you know, let's throw another metal out there that's really of interest to me here too. That is kind of confirming this whole bigger picture story. And all this is happening before the dollar breaks down, and the dollar will break down, whether it spikes first or not, up in the air. I'd say the odds of that happening are maybe 20 to 30%, no more. But that's, you know, that's not zero for sure. But when the dollar breaks, man, it's going to be almost too late to get involved. And the other metal is nickel. When you're talking about, you know, electronic vehicles and batteries, it's a massive shortage of nickel down, you know, over the next 5 years, 5 to 10 years. And nickel has been very low priced. It's been really kind of quiet to the fact that inventories have been falling. Now, all of a sudden, the swaps get crazy. All of a sudden, you know, everyone's concerned about inventories. You know, they're widening their estimates for the deficits in nickel, and it's kind of popping. And it, again, still hasn't broken out. I mean, you can even go down to some of the Brazilian mining shares, nickel or not. I mean, even, you know, in the precious metal sector too, and even some of the low cost silver miners, gold miners, you know, some of these things that you might even look at as like an option. And the last thing I'll mention in this context, and why be worried? What, you know, Albert E. Newman, why me worry? When you look at the volatility, Jordan, of silver on a long term basis, we haven't seen the volatility, and it's coming up now. I mean, this is, you know, 2 weeks ago. We hadn't seen the volatility this low since 2003, when silver was $4 an ounce. All right, that's how uninvested this is. That's how compressed this is. And, you know, this is how you have, you know, exciting dynamics in play already before the dollar's even broken, you know. So that's just screaming to me, yeah, don't worry. I mean, there's risk? Sure, there's always risk. But I'm not concerned about it right now.
Yeah, I would just add, I mean, I like to look at gold against the inverse of the dollar basket. Another way of looking at that is just gold multiplied by the dollar. And I know that you also watch that. That thing is within 3 or 4% of an all-time high. I mean, that's an all-time high. Yeah. Greg, I think when gold and U.S. dollars, but when it hits 1,500, it's probably going to be at an all-time high against the foreign currency basket. And these are major currencies. This is the euro, the yen, the pound. I mean, we're not talking about third world currencies.
Yeah. It's a wide range of currencies. The Swedish krona, okay? For example, when you talk about what's the other one in Europe? Now it's escaping me. I mean, the number of currencies against which gold is making new highs is unbelievable. And the way I actually look at it is I look at it as the dollar divided by gold. So it's what I call the gold-adjusted value of the dollar, which, like you say, is within a couple pips of breaking down. And when you go back and track this back to the 1970s when we delinked from gold, this is where the biggest big picture really develops. Because, you know, and I know, and again, anyone listening to this is smart enough to be listening to this, so they're going to know too. I mean, it's always the dollar is the relief valve. Always. And, you know, and I've talked all the way back in the 90s. You know, I was talking about and doing interviews about the currency competitive devaluation raceway. And we used to talk about currencies each being a NASCAR or, you know, a Formula One car, racing around the racetrack trying to outpace the other ones. You know, it's really started in the mid-90s. And if you remember, too, like trading in currencies almost died then. There was no volatility. Central banks had done everything they could, especially when the euro first came together, the ERM, all the penalties. You can only move 6%. Oh, my God, if you move beyond that, so on and so forth. They had really crushed the volatility in currencies. And it was just like the second you saw exports in Asia post their first year-over-year negative numbers like ever, that was a siren going off, man, to start, you know, selling these currencies. And it was interesting because really ever since then, you know, it's all about currencies. And now you're in a situation where, you know, they all want to basically use their currencies to be stimulative because interest rates are so negative. You look at the case of Sweden, the Riksbank, -1.25%. You know, and the currency there is at an all-time low versus gold, or gold's at an all-time high against the krona. The other one I was trying to think of was not European. It's the Australian dollar. I mean, gold and Aussie dollar, new high. Why? You have a housing market that's in a bubble. It pricked. All of a sudden, you know, the central bank is cutting rates dramatically. The bond market's on fire over there. That was one of our biggest trades, really, over the last 6 to 9 months, has been Italian bonds and Australian bonds. I mean, they've been stellar price performance with huge declines in yields. So there's been a lot of other opportunities. But all of these things do one thing. They speak to gold here.
Okay, Greg, I want to get back to the dollar technically because looking, it's kind of been going sideways or maybe a weak uptrend for the last year or so. But, Greg, I'm looking at the chart and looking at there's three, four lows this year going back to the start of the year. I mean, right around 95, the last one in late June and mid-95s. I mean, it looks to me technically if the dollar loses that level that it's going to break down further. Do you agree with that? And what would a potential downside target be?
I 100% agree with that. And the thing I will add to that is those lows, every single one of those lows is bang on the two-year, which is 104-week exponential moving average, which is one of my favorite trend-defining tools. It really is. You know, we use the 52-week and the two-year, which is just 104 weeks. And the 104-week, the two-year exponential moving average, is phenomenal. It really is. And that those lows, every single one of them is right on that average. So, frankly, if you took just the technical pattern, it would suggest a breakout to the upside. The problem is the momentum here is so built up actually more to the downside. I have my own proprietary indicator I developed in the 80s. I was a math guy, you know, way back when. And it is a what we call the trend countertrend indicator. And its bottom line is if it's positive, then, you know, a breakout would be a trend. If it's negative and a market's breaking out to the upside, then it's not worth following. It's not going to evolve. It's kind of the anti-trend following, you know, move device. And in this case, it is just screaming that if the dollar breaks out, it is not a trend. That the trend, the next trend, is still coming to the downside. 95.02 in the cash dollar index is a key level. If that is violated, and I certainly believe it will be, you're looking at 88. And that's a big move, man. Now, the question mark in all this, actually, Jordan, and what I'm not sure about is how does the renminbi play into all of this? I don't know. I just don't, you know. But ultimately, it is on the dollar. It's always the relief valve. It will be again. The Fed's going to have to be the central banker to the world because nobody else has the firepower here. Now, what Europe could bring if they go to like a two-tiered rate system with a higher deposit rate and a lower borrowing rate, and they facilitate banks making ridiculously cheap loans to consumers and businesses, this could be QE on steroids. So the euro is a big question mark as well. And I really don't know how that's going to play out with the euro. I think there could be huge moves in the short end of the European fixed income curve to the upside in yield. I mean, this could be something that people are not really thinking about or think could happen. And it would be wildly bullish for gold. If they went to a two-tier system where they facilitated banks in Europe basically paying consumers to borrow more money, okay, that might be the most bullish thing for gold, certainly since QE and maybe in 35 years.
Wow. Okay, now I want to talk about commodities and the macroeconomic situation because, I mean, we were talking about silver a little bit earlier. Obviously, if the dollar cracks, you have to think that's bullish for all commodities. But what about the macroeconomic situation, Greg? I mean, this expansion has been going on and on. You know, we have the inversion of the yield curve. We have some people say, you know, not some, but it seems like a lot of people are expecting a recession in the next year or two. If we get a recession, is it going to be a mild one? Or, I mean, what do you see coming for the economy over the next 12, 18 months, and how might that impact commodities?
Yeah, I mean, that's a double-sided question. So, you know, how might it impact commodities is more dependent on the Fed's reaction, you know. And what's interesting about that, because it takes it back to the real economy, which has rolled over, clearly, in my mind. Labor has rolled over. The problem for me is the Fed is so focused on labor. Jerome Powell, and we call him DJ Rome, you know, we like to make some nice, you know, we like to have fun with it, and I respect the guy. You know why? Because last August he came to Jackson Hole and he told us exactly what he's all about. He's a student of the 70s, inflation, the Carter era. He has vowed to make sure that never happens again. Bernanke and Yellen were students of the 20s and the Depression and how to fight a deflation. Jerome Powell is not the same guy that, you know, is a replacement for the previous policy thought process. He's totally different. He owns that. He told us he would get to slightly more than neutral. He did. The problem is inflation fell. He didn't adjust for that. And now beyond being more than slightly neutral towards the tightness, they've been downright tight. And that's been the problem. And when you're focused on the labor market, saying the labor market growth is tight and the Phillips curve and all these academic theories, throw them out the window, man. This stuff is not applicable anymore. because of all the dynamics around it. I mean, we could talk about this, you know, for an hour itself. We won't. The bottom line here is, you know, wage growth peaked. Okay, it's down 80 basis points. If you look at average weekly earnings on a year-over-year basis, it's below 3. On a real basis, it's basically, you know, 1.6 maybe, you know, and closer to 1.2. And if you look at the dynamic around inflation, you know, I mean, the risks are to the downside here. All the Fed's regional surveys, I mean, pricing power is gone. It was there very briefly. And it is gone. You had supply chain issues, gone. You had pipeline issues, gone. You had vendors willing to pay more to meet their customer demand. That doesn't exist anymore. The pressure on inflation is gone. And when you look at import prices and export prices, new lows. All items, fuel, when they talk about the transitory factor, and now DJ Rome has changed it to the transient factor, like, okay, you're fooling us, dude. It is import prices. Track import prices against inflation, and this is a major drag on inflation right now. And the Fed has been trotting themselves out. Four of the regional presidents in the last 60 days have used the same phrase. That doesn't happen unless it's orchestrated. It's not a coincidence when four guys say we are concerned about the risk to the credibility of our inflation target. The credibility, risk is to the downside. This is what they're saying. They know this, and yet it is happening. So the economy really doesn't, I mean, if you're a politician in Washington, you're going to say the economy is really good. We're pumping out jobs. You know, GDP is going to be, you know, relatively strong, so on and so forth. If you look at the periphery, it is fraying very rapidly. Pinning your hopes on the labor market is faulty. The labor market's a lagging indicator, and it's rolling over fast now. Why? Because the economy already started rolling over. So how does the Fed play that? I don't know. And that's the dynamic around all of these markets. Will the Fed get this? Will the, you know, because frankly, the argument here is that the Fed should cut 50 basis points. And I'm not saying this is what they should do, by the way. All right. I think that it should be measured, and it will be. But you could make a case that they should cut 50 basis points just to maintain the neutral policy that they claim they wanted to get to when they started raising rates. Isn't that an interesting thought process? If the Fed doesn't do that, though, that's the risk to the market. And the stock market may have to, you know, ultimately kind of cast the deciding vote. You know, a breakdown in the stock market would be a pretty clear message to the Fed that, you know, you can't wait any longer.
Now, Greg, let's talk about upside targets for gold. And I'm not going to hold you to anything because calling for targets, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything. What only matters is if you made money or not. But just so we can kind of get a sense of what the potential might be, because I mean, gold, I mean, it's already made a big move, not a huge move. I mean, we were talking before we started recording, you mentioned you have a long-term target of, I believe, 2,500. What kind of time frame are we looking at? Are we looking at something that could possibly happen in the next year or two, or is that more like a 3 to 5 year outlook?
Both. I mean, it really is kind of both. I think you're going to get to 2,400 within a year. I mean, our target is really, you know, if you want to lay out the exact math, you know, it's kind of like 2,630 because it's all math based. But I mean, it's kind of like we want to temper what we might think because, you know, we're not trying to sensationalize this either. But, you know, you have a real solid chance because, you know, the numbers will change as you move because the amount of money that's going to be out there is going to change. They're going to print more. So, you know, you could be looking as high as, you know, 3,000, 3,200, you know, if you anticipate some additional, you know, monetary, you know, debasement of currency. You know, within that vein, one of the things that we do is we just have mathematical counts. Okay, so these are, you know, we call them targets just because everyone asks, what's your target? But we do not trade based on any of that, okay? I am not, you know, it's like, okay, well, gold gets to 2,400, I'm going to start to look getting out. Why? Because I projected 24 or 2,630 or whatever, you know, whatever the number is. It's like, no, okay, because by the time you get there, everything will have changed. And, you know, it could be more bullish, could be more bearish. I'll allow my technical indicators that are kind of, are you stretched? Is it overheated? And these kinds of things. We use, you know, various measures of volume versus participation and, of course, momentum. I mean, it's a pretty big model that we use. I'm not a quant guy, but I'm completely a quant guy. You know, we don't make decisions based on quants, but I come from a math background. So, you know, we have mathematical things going on here all over the place all the time. And I look at all of those as much as I look at the breakdown of the macro data, as much as I look at the technical overlay, as much as I consider the psychology of the market. In that vein, the timeline for a move to 2600 would be 3 to 5 years. And I might time that back to August of last year. So now it's maybe, you know, a 30 month to whatever, how many months that would be left, type of thing. But, yeah, this is going to happen over the next 24 to 36 months. Let's put it that way.
Okay, Greg. Now, before we close, tell us about Gold Guru. And again, that's at www.gold-guru.com.
Sure. Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate that. Well, again, like I said, I mean, we did this because, you know, we can reach a wider audience and help more people and kind of maybe even help some of the people that don't have access to the, you know, kind of information that, you know, that we sell to our institutional clients, you know, at thousands of dollars, literally. And we have a lot of people that come to us and, you know, so not necessarily affording or even being able to use that research, frankly, you know, some of the things we trade in, like Italian bonds and Aussie bonds, not everyone has access to that either. So in the sense of just being just hit with so many questions and, you know, whether it's on Twitter or coming from LinkedIn, I mean, really from all over the place, you know, we did the boot camp and that created even more questions from the people that created the, you know, that wanted the boot camp, wanted us to help them. And so, okay, I mean, we'll meet the demand and gold-guru, G-U-R-U, guru.com. And it's even kind of a meditative state type of thing. Why? Because, you know, we're trying to you know, calm nerves and help people and understand, you know, you can not only survive this, man, you can thrive in this. These are going to be phenomenal opportunities coming forward. Already we're seeing them. If you look, First Majestic was our pick last week in terms of the silver stock we liked the most. The thing went, I mean, it was like $9. It's already 12 and a half or something, you know. So, and there's more of this coming. It is early stage. And what we did with gold-guru.com is make it a lot more affordable. It's $60 a month or $600 a year, so you would get 2 months for free by buying the full year. And I think that's a very affordable price. I mean, $60, it's barely a tick in the gold market, for crying out loud. And what we're going to do is, you know, a few times a week, two, three, four, depending on what's needed, you know, put out a report, look at the macro, look at the monetary, look at the technical, and we're going to have specific trading advice in all of these vehicles. I mean, right now, I mean, we bought silver, you know, last week. We're buying platinum today as we speak. So, you know, getting involved in these with the ETFs, with the individual mining shares, and, you know, with the spot futures prices. So that's available right now at gold-guru, G-U-R-U.com.
Okay, again, for everyone out there, that's gold-guru.com. You definitely have to subscribe because Greg is the best at doing this. Greg, I really mean that. You're the best at doing this. I love having you on, and I hope that we can have you back again in the next couple months to talk about whatever new developments arise.
Yeah, my pleasure, Jordan. You did a great job. I know when you first approached me about doing this, you were just a little youngin', you know? And it's like I've watched you grow, and you do a great job. I love your passion, you know? And for me, it's like I do these kinds of things as, you know, give back. Not that, you know, I'm all that, but, you know, 35 years I've been doing this. So, you know, just frankly, to me, being able to survive this long, man, if you could survive as long as I have, you'll be really accomplishing something because it's a tough business. But I love what I do, and I'm happy to bring it to more and more people, and I appreciate what you do, and thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.